You are now listening to Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn.
This is Alon.
This is Jimmy.
It is time to get embarrassed.
And it is time to infect humanity.
Let's do it. Droids cannot produce fast enough.
Alon. My name is Alon.
Welcome to Lost and Rewound, everybody. This is the show where we uncover your tapes, your artifacts of audio variety of yesteryears, because that's what we're here to do. We want to be your purveyors of the old and be able to bring it all full circle, you know?
Yes, that was a really succinct way to explain.
Thank you. I've been trying. I've been practicing in the mirror before recording, and hopefully it has paid off.
Yes. So this show, we are diving into the past. Just like when you look up into the sky and you see a star, you're not really seeing that star.
You're just
seeing the ancient dead star that died millions of eons ago.
Well, yes, it's true. It's that the ancient prophecies do say something, and you have to pay attention to the signs, y'all.
Yeah, so we are again listening to old tapes of yesteryear.
And if you want to contribute to our great cause of keeping the show alive with financial ease, you can go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. That's our patron page where we accept donations of $1, $2, $5, $10, any amount of money at all that you feel is an appropriate amount to give to RFB.
You can also contribute to radiofreebrooklyn.com/LAR.
That's to sponsor our show.
To sponsor just us.
Like a NASCAR team, you know? You can have your brand or your name all over us, right?
On our cars, on
not
our jackets.
Not
on my golf cart. It'll be right next to Reese's.
Yo, we got to go on a golf outing sometime, Doug.
Dude,
I'm telling you.
I would definitely throw down at least $200 on the dumbest golf outfit I could possibly get.
You would.
I would be the best. I want to look exactly like Rodney Dangerfield. So that's the point.
You'd be the young, thinner Rodney Dangerfield.
No, I got to get fat for it. And I got to somehow bug my eyes out. But we'll make it happen.
In the meantime, let's get started and let's see what we got for this week.
On to the show.
Thank you.
the studio, we've got my man, Mr. Samuel Z, star of Stage and Stage and Stage.
Stage and Stage and Stage.
Yes. I've known this guy for a few years now. Great comedian, just did Cinderblock Comedy Festival. Pretty amazing stuff.
Yes, sir.
And again, this guy, Samuel Z. Welcome, welcome.
Hey, welcome, Sam.
What's going on, you guys?
Is it Samuel? I know you're Sam Z, but
You know, it's funny. Usually people, when I tell them that it's Samuel, they'll do the opposite. They think that it's Sam. So nobody really wants to give me what I want.
Did you like Samuel more as a youngster? Or?
I really don't give a shit, is the fact. Is the fact of it. It's just like sometimes you want to change it up a little bit, but nobody, people just want, people call you Sam. People call you Sam or they call you Sam I am. That's about all.
Yeah, I think Sam is one of those names that's so fun to say that people just like to do
Sam.
Different like bits.
Sam.
I get the same thing with Jimmy.
No, actually, I used to get annoyed with it, but no, I don't anymore. I don't get annoyed. I will be called shitface, and I'll be like, oh yeah, that's my name. If someone wants to call me that, I really don't care.
You must have noticed the brown streak.
people fuck up with Jimmy. They like,
oh my god,
dude,
Jimbo,
Jimmy.
Jimmerino, Jimmy Jammy.
It goes much deeper than that. Yeah. I don't know if he's put this in his routine.
Jimmerlingy.
It should have been that. You should have told the teacher. Well, I would like to be called Jimmerlingy Dog Dog.
Yeah, man.
And well, you know, she'd be like, spell that for me, please.
Well, you know, I'm from Massachusetts, and you know what we call sprinkles? We call them Jimmies.
Excuse me?
100% we call them Jimmies.
On donuts?
Like sprinkles on donuts.
Anything
you put them
that...
on. I would like a chocolate ice cream with rainbow Jimmy's, please.
Do you know the origin of that?
I have no clue where it's
from. What's, you know what's much
now
worse
I have
than
to
that?
Find out.
That a Jimmy hat is a condom.
Yes.
That one's
I learned that from like the Jungle Brothers.
Someone told me that. And then
the Jungle Brothers. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say from the Jungle Book. I was like, were we in the same Jungle Book, son? Like Mowgli. What was he doing with these animals in the damn jungle?
Well, Mowgli, the bare necessities really involves this little package here. It's in a little, nice little plastic wrapper. You just take it out and you put it on your little neck there and you just...
Bare necessities.
Well, not bare necessities. We call them bare necessities because you're not wearing any clothes. Take off that little red diaper, Mowgli. Just take it off.
Oh, the dark places that goes. Goodness.
Oh, Hakuna Matata?
So Jimmy hats, yes, okay. I get that.
Yeah,
but we're steering from the main point here, which is that you, Jimmy, had many different variations on your name to the point that you, in 11th grade, you mentioned this early on in our season here on Radio Free Brooklyn, you mentioned that your teacher called you the Flash,
for a whole year. Oh, yeah, she said in the beginning of the year,
whoa.
I'll call you anything you want. But be careful what you wish for, because I'm going to call you this forever for the rest of the year. So I was just like, yeah, I'm taking advantage. So I said The Flash, and she called me The Flash for the whole year. She was so serious about it, too.
Yeah.
I loved it. I kind of wished that everyone called me The Flash.
That's a great deal. That's a great thing for a teacher to do, too. We respect people who tell you their rules right up front. Like, you know, you can't drink in here, but you can drink in there, smoke weed in here, blah, 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 blah. But, like, with teachers, I really respect that rule. It's like, because some kids will, like, come in with their crazy nicknames, and you just give that kid the thing up front. You have them have that control. And then The Flash for the rest of the year.
Again, if you say call me Dr. Poopy Pants, you're going to have to deal with that for a long time.
The repercussions. Listen, that was junior year for you, right, Jimmy?
That was junior year.
What was junior year for you, Sam?
What was junior year of high school? You mean like my nickname or what are you saying?
Did you have a nickname in junior year?
Fuck no. I mean, if you're counting AIM nicknames, yes. But like that was a place where it was like you if you had a nickname, you were lucky. But if you didn't, then you'd like try to get people to call you your AIM name and it just never worked.
That would have never worked for
me. Mine was super nerdy. It was Agent Z16.
That doesn't sound like a hacker at all.
No, it didn't. It wasn't. Maybe accidentally. Maybe like in War Games. But no, I...
War Games. That movie's so good.
Were the letters like different in terms of lowercase and...
Yeah. It was uppercase. I was a little turd. Like I was really obsessed with like grammar and language and that kind of stuff. So I don't know if you can tell by the way I talk. But like a capital A... G-E-N-T. I wasn't all for the like lowercase letters.
Mm-hmm.
And then a capital Z for my last name. And then 16 because I was a sexy 16-year-old, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I want everyone to know.
Man, you could,
this
you
boy.
Could, you could tell by the way I talk.
Tell every bear in the Jungle Book that I am ready to clown around with those bear necessities.
So if everyone likes the bear, then, what's the deal with the tiger? There must be something.
Shere Khan?
Shere Khan?
They're really afraid of him.
Shere Khan? Shaka's brother. what's the deal with the tiger? Well, the tiger, I mean, he's just an asshole. He's just a complete
dickbag.
Villain.
Yeah.
I know, I'm just trying to write him into the sexual Jungle Book.
Oh, no.
dude.
Oh, gotcha. I see what you're saying.
He'll be like a Marquis de Sade.
Well, you know
oh,
what the,
no.
You know what Disney's doing now is they're doing all these movies now where they give the backstories of all of the villains, right? They made the one with Angelina Jolie as Maleficent, and they made... And I think they're doing one with Ursula, which I'm really excited about, too.
Ooh.
Yeah, and Cruella de Vil is going to be Emma Stone.
They did do a 101 Dalmatians live action,
yes.
And they had Glenn Close
and
play.
She was fantastic as Cruella de Vil. But but can you imagine Emma Stone as young Cruella de Vil? I just,
nope.
Like, I can't wait for that.
I want to see it, but
I really
want
to see that, yeah.
I want to see, like, a Jafar... starring
you would
the
be
guy.
A great Jafar.
I could do a Jafar.
You could
actually.
Totally do a Jafar.
I could. I could totally pass for anything.
People might think
ethnic.
You're gay for like 4 years afterwards because Jafar is like super gay.
I feel like I want him to be the guy from Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And he's also in The Mummy. Like that guy
yeah.
would be. Diamond in the Rough.
You were into Disney films a lot when you were younger?
Oh, yeah, of course. It's like, I grew up with an older sister, and then I have a younger sister, too, so we never stopped watching Disney films. We had all the tapes, we had everything, yeah.
Pause one second. You were the middle child a younger sister and an
yes,
older sister.
Yes, sir.
Tell me...
Explains the pink hair.
no judgment there, but I must admit, I think this might be one of the first times that on this show, with any iteration, that we've come across a middle child. Personality-wise, how did that affect you in the household?
Everyone thinks I'm gay.
you guys can't see his face because we're on the radio.
Actually, I've never been more sure of being straight than this weekend when Elsa Waite, fantastic comedian, I love her to death, she's fantastic, and she doesn't know me that well, but she came up to me. She overheard that I was talking to another comic about not being, I'm not gay, and she looks at me, and she goes, looks me dead in the eye, and she goes, Sam, Sammy baby. She says, how long have I known you for? Like a couple of years, I've been in the scene. Okay. This entire time, you have not been gay. And I said, no. She goes, all right. Vindication, I think. When a black lesbian woman stares you down and says, are you sure that you're not gay? And if at that moment you don't crumble and you just stand your ground, then you are. Then you're whatever
sure?
you say you are. You're whatever you say you are.
This whole time. You mean that time you came on stage naked with a banana in your butt? You were straight then, too?
Was comedian Sam born out of the household in Massachusetts?
Yes, 100% it did. And I can tell you where it came from exactly. Before, you know, none of us really know what a comedian is. None of us, when you're growing up, you're like, you sort of see people on stage.
We still don't.
Right. Evidently, there's a difference between a comic and a comedian now in 2016.
Right. I still don't. I say comedian because I'm a pretentious motherfucker and I like using big words. But really, nobody knows what a comic or a comedian is. You just see people on TV and, oh, that's funny. But then you start to realize over time. But when I started out, I'll tell you this. It was all about, you know, watching on, in those days, Nickelodeon, that would show old reruns of Looney Tunes. And there was nobody that I wanted to be more than Bugs Bunny. He could put on a dress, and he could put on an accent, or he could put on, you know, make his ears different types of hair. He could be whatever he wanted.
He was versatile.
Versatile. He could do whatever he wanted, and I wanted whatever that was. I wanted that spark. And to me, it didn't make sense that he was a cartoon and I was not a cartoon. I just wanted to find out some way to get that same aura.
I always identify with Daffy. Does that mean that I have a defeatist attitude?
It's very, very possible.
Like, every time that Daffy wouldn't get it done, I'd be like, man, goddamn it, Daffy. It'd be the same thing with Wile E. Coyote. I was like, can you just catch the Roadrunner, like, one time?
It is the eternal struggle. It really is watching those shows. It's about humanity. It's that those shows are nothing to do with animals. It's humans.
I swear to God, though, that all the Looney Tunes cartoons are put into either two categories. Either there's the... hapless, always, you know, getting hurt, or there's the always hurting other people.
Yeah, that's true.
That was the trope.
Creator-destroyer theory.
Exactly.
I mean, that's pretty, yeah, that's pretty,
yeah,
I think that's
Bugs,
true. Yeah.
Bugs did both, though. Bugs would get blown up and Bugs would blow people up.
Barely, though. I feel like he was always on the upper hand, almost always.
No, there's plenty of times where Bugs would get his little whiskers fried off or something.
Certainly there were.
Oh, I mean, like the opera,
would do it,
for sure.
He would do it in the way that he was going to win at the end.
Yep. Yep, and but something would happen where he'd create this whole elaborate scheme to blow up Elmer Fudd or something like that, and Elmer Fudd would get blown up, and then he'd, like, get maybe a little singed or whatever like that. He'd be like, well, who needs whiskers anyway? anyway, and he'd just walk away or whatever.
I had this like reveal that a lot of people don't know, that Mel Blanc said he's doing a mixture of a Brooklyn and a Bronx accent.
Right, right.
And I'm like, yeah, what do you think, like the, what's up, man? Like, what do you think that is? Like, people say that all the time, except that they're trying to like steal your wallet instead of like blow you up with dynamite.
Right, right, right. And they love carrots in the Bronx. They just, everyone's going around with a carrot in his hand, just walking around.
Well, and they're just looking for all them bunnies.
Blunts or cigars basically get replaced with carrots. Oral fixation.
Oh my God, can you imagine if like all the time he was just smoking? I know that everybody smoked in those days.
Yeah.
But if it was just this the most popular cartoon and he just always had like a cigarette in his hand. I just like, all right, kids, how are you going to break free from this? Well, I'm in your dreams.
The cold clasp of nicotine around your throat for your entire life.
What was the name of the gangster? Was it Bugsy was his name?
Bugsy. Oh, I loved Bugsy.
And Ship.
Ship. Ship. I love that guy.
Oh, but he had a cigar.
I did it, but. He's in the other room. Oh, God. That I forgot about those guys. Those guys were great.
He had a cigar, though, because if you smoked in the cartoons, it was synonymous with being a villain.
Yeah.
So you couldn't get away with doing that as a protagonist.
Yeah. They have a great act with Bugs. Bugsy and I think the big guy, there's a whole thing where they... You know, it starts off with you hear the sirens and there's a jailbreak and they, you know, hole up in a hotel or something like that. But Bugs ends up, one of the great things about Bugs, he can end up anywhere because he's a bunny and he's got the hole. He can make a hole wherever he wants and come up. It's like metaphysical. It's great.
That's true.
And so he creates a hole. You just see the hole coming through and he comes in. He's like, I don't know how I feel about this. It's actually the first time you sort of feel that Bugs is up against a force that maybe he can't control. The mob! Like, he's like, if you fuck with these guys, you've got, like, an entire...
Doesn't he fight Hitler at one point?
No, we talk about that's Daffy.
That's
Dog.
Daffy.
Yeah,
okay.
We talked about that.
There's a Porky cartoon as well. There's a Porky cartoon with that involves Hitler, I believe.
See, the thing is, so
that
I believe it does.
Know.
I don't think it's fighting Hitler, but it involves Hitler. Like, there's a Hitler reference.
Yeah.
Check me on it.
Yeah, I remember that.
I might be full of shit.
I'll have to look
See, the thing about Daffy is you think that he would get into water and he would all of a sudden, like, be invincible, but he's just even worse in water.
Right.
And he always like loses his like somehow his feathers will come off like shorts.
Right.
Naked like duck butt.
That was such a good gag. Well, I saw that and I was like, I want to take off my human skin. I want to see what's underneath there.
What kind of humor did you have when you were starting out as a comedian? When did you have your first set?
I tell people that I'm 3 years in because that's when I moved to New York City. But truth be told, my first comedy set was in middle school, right around the time of the recording that we're going to be listening to later. My first comedy set was in middle school, and I'll tell you, I had 15 minutes, and it was at a talent show, and it was the biggest audience I performed to ever, and I bombed. Like, I totally just ate it. I ate the AstroTurf. It was,
You learn so much more from the bombs than you do from succeeding.
Did you throw out, or did you save your first set? You know, obviously, you probably were writing it down, and you had it all written down.
As I said, I didn't know what a stand-up comedian was at that point. I knew that there was like a thing such as going on stage and jokes and that you could call yourself a stand-up comedian, but I didn't know how you would get to the point of writing jokes. So I stole every word. I stole every single word. I was a little bit on, you know, everyone's a little bit on spectrum, but my particular brand of spectrum was that I would memorize jokes. I'd memorize jokes for people who would tell them. And I told some of those jokes, and they were street jokes. You know, like one of them that I remember telling, stupid, mushroom that goes into the bar and he says, hey, can I have a drink? There's mushrooms here. Why not? I'm a fun guy. Stuff like that. But like, you imagine a little kid saying that to an entire auditorium of kids, and they just don't get it.
It's
they
chutzpah.
Just don't like it.
That's what we call chutzpah.
I mean, yeah, I guess I knew what a fun guy was in seventh grade. They taught me that shit. So I should have gotten that joke.
It's like only one person laughing in the audience. It's like your biology teacher who's just like in the back.
Fun guy! The guy! Oh my God, Sam!
Is my biology teacher
That's
Sam Kennison?
Host. All right.
I assume your biology teacher was a quiz. Was really like a maniac.
We got pulled together, y'all. We got pulled together. Go on, continue, Sam.
So that was my first stand-up set. It was just a total train wreck, and I left that experience, but I didn't give up. I mean, I think it was like years later that at summer camp I performed in some stand-up, and
I'm so glad you mentioned that.
What, the summer camp?
Yeah, tell me about the summer camp. Yeah, because I mean, you could probably get away with it because you're not going to see these kids for another year.
For sure. So that's when I first started writing jokes. That was almost worse thing.
Why was that worse?
Well, because so I would write my jokes, right? And I was not a popular kid at school. But the reason that you go to summer camp is to find your tribe. That's what I truly believe. If you can't find your tribe at school, then your parents send you away in the summer to find a different tribe. And that's where I found my tribe of kids, and that was popular for the first time in my life. For the first first time ever in my life. It took me, you know, 16 years to get there, but I finally did it. That was an experience, though, where, you know, I started writing my jokes, and almost worse than bombing is hearing people laugh when you don't think that they should. So going up on stage with material that I was maybe 50% confident in, but I was still kind of cocky because I was like, oh, these guys love me, and I hope I never do that again. That was another lesson where it was like, compared to starting out stealing jokes and not having them work and then writing my own jokes and having them go over really well, but thinking, I don't know if that was as good as you thought it was. You know, hearing people just go, ah, ha, 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 worse than the fucking biology teacher is the guy who's like, yes.
Sometimes you have to just sort of pretend that people either like you or will entertain you.
Yep.
Because I did the same kind of thing yep. in the day camp that I went to, this YMCA camp called Seawalk Amano. It wasn't like a consistent thing, but I do remember one summer I was very much influenced by the top 10 list that David Letterman had. And the only reason I knew about them was because they would re-air the next morning on my local radio
station.
Those were
great. I was obsessed with those, too. We had a book of them that a kid passed around to school. I wasn't allowed to watch late-night TV, but I read the book. Like, the book was fantastic.
Every day, or maybe once a week. Again, I don't remember the consistency, but I recently found these. I shit you not, I saved about maybe 8 of these.
You wrote
these.
Them yourself.
Of these top 10 lists that I would read at the end of the camp days that were camp-centric top 10 lists.
Oh, no.
Like top 10 reasons why Camp Seawalk Amano was awesome, for example.
Yeah.
But like they would be funny and they would be very geared towards the camp and like inside jokes, et cetera, et cetera,
right,
et cetera.
Right.
And some people would laugh.
Yeah.
And sometimes people wouldn't laugh. But I knew because of the age range that I had to keep it real PC.
Yeah, my voice is still hurting from that laugh.
Get some water?
That has nothing to do with what I just said.
I know, I'm just messing with you.
Asshole.
No, but I was going to say...
fucking laugh, dude. Don't fake fucking laugh!
I had one show where I seated an audience, and it was like half my peoples. And my material was like the most... you know, practice stuff I'd done, and I was like maybe a year into the game,
yeah.
And it was one of the better shows I ever did, and I was always thinking afterwards, and I'm saying, oh, how much extra did I get?
Yeah, for sure.
But again, this is one of your first sets, and you were just doing, you just started.
Right,
so,
right.
But if we do a room, and we've got 15 people in it, and then we get 5 people, like, going?
Yeah.
You're doing well, man.
Yeah, 100%.
If you have a room of 2,500 people and 250 people laugh,
yeah.
You hear those 250 people laugh.
Yeah, right.
The deal is that we don't have a gigantic room where you can hit and, like, select parts of the audience and have it bring everybody else around. And they didn't come to see us. You know, when you go to a comic and you've known the guy for years and he can say something that's sort of funny, but you love him.
Yeah.
So he's
that's
that much
really
funnier.
Interesting.
You just love
that's
him.
Really, really interesting.
So all of a sudden he's just like, you're ready to laugh.
Yeah.
You're into it
yeah.
already.
Yeah.
The clip that you brought,
yeah.
though not audio explicitly, the audio is clearly the more important part.
And
obviously enough of an integral part of the clip because it is in fact a video. And it is a video of you performing in a middle school musical. You were 14?
I want to say the time of this filming, I was 12.
Yeah, middle school.
You were 12?
I was 12 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was 7th grade.
It was 7th grade.
Yeah.
And it was My Fair Lady, and you were cast as Alfred P. Doolittle, the father of the main character. I can't say that I am completely familiar with My Fair Lady. So if you
How
could...
How dare you, sir?
But I
you
know...
You need to go and learn your
well,
piece of
I know,
cues.
I know,
Henry Higgins!
I know the songs. I'm familiar with some of the songs. I just, for what it may be worth, I've never seen the movie. And at any rate,
Listen, you're a straight man. It's totally fine.
I was going to say, you're not
missing... If
not
my wife was here, she could tell you all about it. She loves that movie.
Yeah. You're not missing much. I'm sorry, listeners.
I disagree with you. I love that movie. I'll watch that movie right now.
Did you?
I'll leave here right now and watch that movie.
Did you watch the movie in preparation for your
100%, yeah.
Had you seen it before?
Yeah.
You had?
I'd seen it before. I grew up, I mean, as I said, grew up with sisters. So you grew up with sisters and a mother and then my stepmother as well. So you just have a lot of these girly things around. And one of the very girly things is like old Hollywood movies. And My Fair Lady came at that time, directed by Vincent Minnelli, father of Liza Minnelli and married to Judy Garland. That time of like Hollywood films where... It's kind of like how Marvel is now, actually. The biggest grossing films were the musicals, the big, big, colorful musicals. And mm-hmm. so they made just so many musicals because they would make a lot of money.
When you auditioned, or you did audition, or did you just get cast straight up?
I auditioned, actually. And the way that it worked was you had to go in for an audition and... Then you went in for a second audition after everybody had sort of started rehearsals. But it was, even then, like, even though it's, you know, middle school, it's still fucking political. You know
oh
what I mean?
God.
It's still so fucking
the
political.
Politics never end.
No, and they start from the womb.
Exactly. they're consistent. They're never ending.
So I did do an audition. I don't know how much you want me to go into it, but I was really serious. And actually, this is maybe antithetical to what I was saying before about Bugs Bunny. That I think that I really liked Bugs Bunny, and secretly I was Bugs Bunny, but outwardly I was Laurence Olivier. I wanted everyone to think that I was this serious person. I want people to take me seriously. And I started acting early, and I always went out for the serious roles. Maybe a little bit funny, maybe a little bit charming, but not... I didn't want to do the stupid guy, right? And I just saw a progression where I was getting cast in these plays, the children's plays, albeit, but cast in these plays is just the dumb guy, the dumb fuck, you know, like the guy who's just the village idiot. I wanted to be Henry Higgins, the lead, and if I couldn't be Henry Higgins, I knew that was probably not going to happen because I was a seventh grader, but if I couldn't be Henry Higgins, I wanted to be Freddie, who has this gorgeous song at the end you probably heard of called On the Street Where You Live. On the street where you live. And I wanted to be that guy. But when I really thought about it, this was maybe the first moment that I realized that I could be a comedian, because I thought through all the roles that I've been doing ever since, like, you know, children's theater at the YMCA and stuff, and I realized I'm just a dummy. That's what people see me as. They want to see me pratfall, and maybe they want to see me have that little spark of intelligence, but then they want to see me get a pie in my face because that's extra funny. And so that was a moment that I realized I'm not going to audition for these other guys. I'm going to go for that part, played by Stanley Holloway, brilliant comic actor of the time, and I'll see if it works. And it did.
Well, let's take a listen to this first scene, the introduction of Alfred P. Doolittle, and the way you interpret this character, in my opinion, is brilliant, but we will hear that for ourselves. It does include the song With a Little Bit of Luck.
Out you go, hop it now, on the double. Thanks for your hospitality, George. Send the bill to Buckingham Palace.
Well, Alfie, I guess it's down we go.
Oh, what do you want to go for? Eliza should be along in a couple of minutes. She ought to be worth half a crown for her father, what loves her.
Loves her? That's a laugh. You ain't been near her for months.
What's that got to do with it? What's half a crown after all I'll give her?
When did you ever give her anything?
Anything? I'll give her everything. I'll give her the greatest gift any human being can give to another. Life! I introduced her to this here planet I did with all its wonders and marvels. This lovely world with the sun that shines and the moon that glows. I'd park to walk through on a fine spring night. The old running city of London to go about and sell her bloomin' flowers. I gives her all that, and then I disappears and leaves her on her own to enjoy it. Now, if that ain't worth half a crown now and again, I'll take my belt off and give her what for.
You got a good heart, Alfie, but if you want that half a crown from Eliza, you better have a good story to go along with it.
Eliza! What a surprise!
Not a frost, Baldy.
Come on, Eliza. You wouldn't have the heart to send me home to your stepmother without a bit of legal protection, now would you?
Stepmother? Ha! Stepmother, indeed.
Well, I'm willing to marry her. It's me that suffers for it. I'm a slave to that woman, Eliza. Just because I ain't a lawful husband. Come on, Eliza. Slip your old dad out the crown.
Well, I had a bit of me own luck last night. So he asked.
George, three glorious beers.
But don't you keep coming around talking on off ground for me.
Good night, Eliza. You're a noble daughter. You see, boys, I told you not to go. It's just faith, hope, and a little bit of luck. The Lord above made man an arm of iron, so he could do his job and never shirk. The Lord above made man an arm of iron, with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, someone else will do the thing and work.
Wait a little bit,
wait
a little bit,
wait
a little bit,
our
luck
you'll
never work.
The Lord above made liquor for temptation, to see if man could turn away from sin. The Lord above made liquor for temptation, but with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, when temptation comes, you'll give right in.
Wait a little bit, wait a little bit. the stride and narrow, but with a little bit of luck you'll run amok. The gentle sex was made for man to marry, to share his nest and see his food is cooked. The gentle sex was made for man to marry, but with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, you can have it all and not get hooked. With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit, you will get it. With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of blooming light.
Shut your face down there. How's Woods
got
scared
of rest? I'm trying to keep him quiet, lady.
Hey, shut up. Once and for all, shut up.
Here, that's no way to talk to a lady. We gotta be neighborly like boys, after all. Love made man to help his neighbor, no matter where or land or sea or foe. The Lord above made man to help his neighbor, but with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, when he comes around, he won't be home.
With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of luck, he won't be home.
Throw his throw and goodness at you, but with a little bit of luck, a man can duck. Oh, it's a crime for a man to go for landrin and fill his horse for a even down. Oh, it's a crime for a man to go for landrin, but with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, you can see that the hell don't fall out.
With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of luck, she won't find out. With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of blooming luck.
Bravo, bravo.
Oh, God.
It's just a little bit.
I do it for the love. I do.
Yeah, so I kind of like you there, see? You
know, for old apples and pears.
For being such a young sprout.
Boy. The funny thing is now, like, if I was going to do that part, I think, if I was going to do that part again, I think I'd want to do it as, like, a Ray Winstone. You're like... like, Roger, I'm going to give you one more. Like, really dark, kind of like,
oh, man, fuck you, Roger. Fuck you. I'm going to give you what for. I'm going for, Roger. I'm right when you stand. I'm going to fuck you up. I don't take no shit from nobody.
The more grizzled side of Alfred P. Doolittle.
All right.
So the one thing we miss with just listening to the audio is the fantastic, colorful visuals. I was given the honor of digitizing this, I got a chance to watch you in your 12-year-old prime in this. What kind of garb? I don't even know. Could you please explain about what wardrobe was making you wear for this play?
Yeah, I mean, it was all mothers who were brought on, mothers of the kids who knew how to sew. And one interesting story was I was really obsessed with the idea that he would have a dustman's cap. So Alfred P. Doolittle, he is someone known as a dustman, but it's an English word for trash guy. He's just a trash dude. He's like,
he takes out the bin.
He takes out the bin. So I'll take your little victuals and your little some tea. No.
He has what's called a dustman's cap. And what you see in the movie, as well as any other versions of the show, is it's this like little cap, and it kind of looks like a pilot's cap, sort of a big old flap in the back. It's just a big old flap. Looks like a Rastafarian a little bit when he wears it. But I saw that in the movie, and I was such a little pretentious asshole. I said to the director, "Can I get a dustman's cap? You know, like I'm some fucking like Oscar winner. Like, could I just? I just really
I need a robe and a dustman's cap.
Would you be able to provide me with a dustman's cap under no expense of my own?"
And the director was my history teacher,
Mr. Rooney.
Mr. Rooney was
Mr.
also
Mr. Rooney was his name,
and he also acted as the director.
Oh my God, this dustman's cap looks ridiculous.
Yep, right.
I'm glad I have Google.
It's yeah, right?
Really
cheating.
Idiotic looking.
Just like stupid. Yeah, and it's useful, but it's the kind of thing that the upper classes always make the lower classes wear, not because it's useful to them, but just because they like seeing the lower classes wear silly things.
All right, clown, now dance. Take out the dustbin and dance.
I find that remarkably ironic considering just how silly the upper class themselves look.
100%. But they think they look Fantastic.
Mm. Now,
that's all that matters.
Aristocracy.
Right. Yeah, they've got
their own special. Like the guys on Wall Street who wear suspenders. I'm like, fuck you. I wear suspenders.
I wore suspenders for my wedding. So
does it...
I can dig suspenders for the right reasons.
No one judges you for anything you wear at a wedding. You realize that?
Well,
a wedding?
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
Like really tough gangsters in Gallagher wear suspenders. This is what we know.
I do wear suspenders from time to time. Jim knows this.
So your outfit was like, it was a red shirt and a black vest.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like very...
And Mr. Rooney nixed the cap originally. He said, we can't afford that. I don't think we'll be able to get it. He's got a Boston Brahmin accent, which is this particular kind of accent that people in Boston have, especially the upper classes. John Kerry has one a little bit. The Kennedys all had it.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's very almost English a bit.
Tiger talk, you know, the Kennedy talking, potato, talk a bit like that.
I'll tell you what was embarrassing about this recording was that, and I was just whispering this to Jimmy when we were listening to it, that I had a Mondo crush on the girl who played my daughter.
That's
she was
awkward.
An eighth grader.
She was taller than you too.
She was way taller than I was. Yes.
Go for it, man.
Yeah, you know them tall. I
could not go for it. I had zero game. I had less than game.
That'd be a great name for a movie where a kid gets game. Less than game.
Less than game.
He had to learn game from the best. Like Michael Jordan somehow comes in. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna teach you how to play basketball and pick up women and grow little mustaches.
I'll be honest with you, Jimmy, I was so uncool in middle school, I would not have known who Michael Jordan
was. Get out of town. You were uncool in middle school?
We got the tape to prove it.
Actually, no, that's not true. When did Space Jam come out?
97.
Whenever Space Jam came out, that's when I knew who Michael Jordan was.
It was like 96 or 97.
You know what's too funny?
Okay, so then I would have known who Michael Jordan was, but I might not have known like more about him than Space Jam.
You know what's the best thing about Space Jam? I was going to talk about Space Jam when we were talking about Looney Tunes before, and I didn't, and Space Jam suddenly made its way into the conversation anyway.
I will inject Space Jam into every conversation.
Somehow it always
comes.
I would put some of my own money into a Kickstarter to get LeBron James to do, you know, Space Jam 2. Dude, Space Jam 1 was
Somebody's
so bad.
Somebody's on the fence.
Space Jam 1 was so bad.
I wouldn't care. I just would not put money
you
into it.
You don't need anything to make it. I mean, I'm not talking like real money.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking
space money.
I'm talking about
space money from the Monstars.
I'm talking metaphorical money on the radio money.
One thing I actually noticed about this, it wasn't necessarily just kids. You had a fair amount of adults.
I was hoping you were going to bring that up. No, there was one adult.
Only one?
One adult, and his name was Mr. Latham, and he was the art teacher, and we all loved him. He was just the nicest guy. He was the kind of guy who would just. I remember what he would say to us. You know, he was maybe the first big personality that I met that I just really liked a lot. He would just walk through the streets just singing. Everyone just loved him.
1989, I was 6 or 7 years old, and the first play I did was very much integrated with adults and kids. It was the Woodstock Youth Theater, which didn't really make much sense why there were so many adults. But that said, I don't think there's anything wrong in having adults in the play.
But what about one adult?
That's where I'm going to go with that, is that I'm concerned as to why he had to be cast
It depends on the casting. Yeah, it depends on the casting. Like, say if there was one role in a play and, like, you know, say you did Peter Pan and you had Captain Hook and he was the only adult, I'd get it. Because he's the only adult.
In the Muppets, they do this, where it's like there's all the characters are Muppets except for some of the key parts, which are humans.
Okay, so why did he get cast, though? Sorry, I want to get back to that.
It's really just, it was tradition. It was the kind of thing that just...
He did every play anyway?
He did every single year he was cast. There was just one musical in middle school, and every single year he was cast as one of the characters. And they would always have to think about which character would be most appropriate, but there was always one character that he played.
Was it professionally videotaped?
I don't imagine it was.
I can tell you it must have been from my
understanding. Oh, you think so? Really?
Because the camera angles are legitimately cutting in different places.
Oh, okay.
That does not change the fact that you are as white as a ghost.
Well, okay, so professional camera, right, but not professional lighting, and fuck not professional makeup. I mean, it's all mothers who are doing this.
Did they put eyeliner on you?
They probably did. Right. I remember they made my face really dirty. Yeah. Like,
when
really,
I did
really
a stage
dirty.
Play the first time, they were like, okay, now we got to put the eyeliner on you.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what?
No.
They were like, well, if you don't, I won't see your eyes. I'm like, yeah, you'll see them.
Was it the first of many or the last time that you did a musical for North and Over Middle? Or the school district,
I love that
I suppose.
You know the name because it's written on the front of the VHS tape.
Holland and North and Over Middle School.
Yeah.
No, for the school district, I guess, then.
Oh, no, I did theater until I graduated. I did theater and get in college.
Musicals to not die.
Well, the truth is I got out of the musical game pretty quick because though I really do, and you guys make fun of me for this, I'm a straight man who just loves musicals. I really do love musicals.
There's nothing wrong with being a straight kid in musical theater. I mean, you were going to be the minority for
yes,
sure.
Yeah. With musicals, because you have these giant casts, it almost ends up being an all-out orgy. Because, like, this just, you can disappear. Yeah. You can fuck one person one week, and then the next, we weren't fucking
well,
school,
yeah, but, yeah. Well, hooking
yeah,
up.
Middle school orgies.
Hooking up was a big thing in The Wizard of Oz and in Bye Bye Birdie, I remember.
Oh, my God.
And there's something so sexy about the Wicked Witch of the West hooking up with the Scarecrow. I don't know what it is, but I love it.
I was the Cowardly Lion, but now I got myself some courage.
Was there any fraternizing in this particular production?
Oh, boy, was there. So,
tell me about this fraternizing that goes on.
Fraternizing?
So, I told you already that I had a crush on, her name was Kendra. She played my daughter. And I had a crush on her. Nothing was ever going to happen between us. But I do know that she hooked up with the Henry Higgins from the alternate cast.
There was an alternate cast
right. that performed on Thursday nights.
Right.
And I think she, and it was middle school hooking up. Like, I don't think, like, under the shirt, maybe. Who actually knows what happened?
Who knows what's under that shirt?
But, yeah, who knows what's under that shirt?
It's another shirt.
It's another shirt. it's a souvenir shirt from last year's show.
I'm taking it home with me.
But I think there was rumors that she hooked up with him, which was kind of interesting because it wasn't her Henry Higgins, it was another Henry Higgins, whatever. So, you know, in middle school is where you start to, like, discover your body parts and stuff. And
I've got legs.
Just on your own, right? Yeah, legs. You like legs. And I remember that one of the other things you sort of discover is you sort of discover how you are perceived. And, you know, you sort of start to see, like, oh, Kendra's above my league, but Kathleen, she's kind of a little bit, you know, right? And there was a Kathleen, I'll tell you this, I won't say her last name, but there was a Kathleen that I thought was a little bit more my style, and she was pretty hot stuff, and she got hotter stuff the next year. I told you about Mr. Rooney, right?
You did.
Mr. Rooney! So one of the greatest things about Mr. Rooney was that he was such a big personality, and he also knew, more than anybody else, how straight and narrow and backward-thinking most of the parents in the audience were going to be. And that if there was anything that got into the show that was slightly above PG-13, he was going to have the show canceled. And so he would say to us, he would give us a lecture at the beginning of the year, and he would say, because you're up on stage, you might think this show is yours, but this show belongs to Mr. Rooney. He would talk about himself in the third person, like a fucking wrestler. We loved him. It was great.
Come into the stage, the baddest man in Andover, Rooney!
Mr. Rooney! And then he would finish the speech by saying, if you do anything, on the stage or in the rehearsal room, under the level of standard that we've set up, I don't care if your grandmother is the Queen of England and your grandfather's the Pope. You'll be out of here sooner than you can say Jack Robinson.
I don't care if your father is Mahatma Gandhi
and then he would sing. He would sing to us. He would go,
oh, no.
It's Rooney's weedin' time. It's Rooney's weedin' time. It's time to say goodbye. It's time to say goodbye. And that was the song he would sing if he would kick someone out of the show.
I think he would sing it probably even
amazing.
On his own time at the in privacy, probably.
Absolutely.
That's probably.
Maybe he was like, he's doing some gardening. It's Rooney's time.
He's like, you know, same way. He's locking the door. He's like, lighting candles. It's Rooney's time. Rooney's time.
And so
tonight.
There was this pressure cooker situation where it's like you knew that all the dirty stuff, I mean, not even just like hooking up. We're 12 and 13-year-old boys, so like we're assholes. We want to talk about, you know, penises and stuff. And everybody knew what farts were, but we wanted to like also let everyone know that we'd seen Caddyshack 4 times and quote it and all that kind of stuff. But we had to say that slightly because if Mr. Rooney is talking about little penises or talking about the scene in Caddyshack where he takes off her blah, blah, you know, we were going to get kicked out. Absolutely. It was just such a high-pressure situation to be a young preteen boy wanting to menace a little bit, but also have the Mr. Rooney. And we respected him. We really respected him. We also wanted to be insane, bonkers little preteen boys. Oh, and oh, Kathleen. This is what I'm going to tell you about Kathleen.
Yes.
Okay, so Kathleen, she got real hot in 8th grade. You know, there's something that happens with teenagers, or preteens, between 7th and 8th grade, like the 12 and the 13 year.
It didn't happen to me, but I know it.
Most people.
There's a word for it. Puberty.
Puberty, right. Some happens, exactly. But it's just, you just blossom, and she just blossomed. And I'll tell you this. She was cast as the lead role in the musical The 8th Grade Year. This is not My Fair Lady. We did the pajama game that year. And it became known during rehearsal sessions that Kathleen was the only girl we had ever seen known personally who had started wearing thong underwear.
Dun, dun, dun.
And we found this out.
We
found this out because she told us. She was the kind of person who wanted everybody to know. And not only that, but if you asked her nicely and if she liked you, she would take you into a dark corner of the theater.
Did you just bang into the mic, Jimmy?
I almost fainted.
You almost.
And I remember.
You heard it here, too.
I knew this was the thing, and I never wanted to touch it. I was so scared of sexuality. I didn't understand myself. I didn't understand all sorts of things. But of course, inside, you've got all sorts of things going on. You're just like, I want that thing. But then other guys are able to be so much smoother. Maybe those are the ones who are able to, like, you know, ease into puberty much better. And I remember there was a guy, Brian, who not only asked her, but was a repeat visitor to the back corner of the North Andover Middle School Theater. And this was the year that I realized how hot the pressure cooker was going to get, because I don't know that Mr. Rooney knew about the back corner, but I think that he knew what kind of young teenage puberty people he was dealing with in this case, and he knew he had to control it.
That's why the teachers are equipped with hot pokers.
Exactly.
Away from each other!
Yeah. So Mr. Rooney already knew that Kathleen was a hot ticket and that he was going to be able to control her. And the final night of the show, it ends with the two leading man and woman, and they say a thing at the end. It's a pajama game, and so they're dressed in pajamas. And he's got the bottoms on, so his shirt is out. His you know, manly form is out. And then she's got the top on, covering her lady bits, right? And the way that Doris Day did it in the movie is they say, married life is lots of fun, the man says. And the woman says, now two can sleep as cheap as one. And when she says cheap, she lifts up just a tiny bit of her top. And she shows just a little bit of panty, right? Just a little bit of panty, very risque for the time.
Oh,
Doris Day probably did it intentionally because she needed to smite that whole nice person thing. But of course, when Kathleen did it, they come out, he's wearing an undershirt because we can't show his nipples, and she's wearing a super long, almost nightgown, so she can't even really lift it up. But here's what happens. Come out, he says, married life is lots of fun, and she says, now two can sleep, and when she gets to cheap, she pulls up her top, sticks her little tushy out, and shakes it at the audience, cheap as one. And the audience just is silent. Lights go out, little pause, and they start clapping.
It's a 13-year-old.
Because a little 13-year-old just shook her tushy at you.
That's horrifying.
And I swear to you, I heard backstage Mr. Rooney just go, it's not that kind of a show!
And then Rooney started singing his song. That's Rooney
time. It was the last night of the show, and she was graduating. Wouldn't you do the same thing?
We have to talk about marriage.
Why?
Because that's the next clip.
Oh, okay. So let's talk about marriage.
All right. Let's listen to Get Thee to the Church on Time.
Has no mercy, sinnery to spawn me in more misery. Me own flesh and blood. Well, I'm miserable, all right. You can tell him that straight.
What are you talking about? What are you all dressed up for?
As if you didn't know. Go on back to that Wimpole Street devil and tell him what he done to me.
What has he done to you?
He's ruined me, that's all. Destroyed me happiness. Tied me up and delivered me into the hands of middle-class morality. And don't you defend him. Was it him or was it not him that sent a letter to an old American blotter named Wallingford, who has given $4 million to found more reform societies and tell him that the most original moralist of England is Mr. Alfred P. Doolittle, a common dustman?
That sounds like one of his jokes.
You may call it a joke. Put the lid on me right enough. The bloke died and left me £4,000 in his blooming will.
Oh, come on, Alfie. In a couple of hours, you'll have to be at the church.
Church?
Yes, church. The deepest cut of all. Well, why do you think I'm dressed up like a ruddy pallbearer? Your stepmother wants to marry me. Now, she's respectable, and I want to be respectable.
That's the way you feel. Why don't you give the money back?
That's the tragedy of it. It's easy to say, chuck it, but I haven't the nerve. We're all intimidated. Intimidated, Eliza, that's what we are. And that's what I am. Follow. And that's what your precious professor has brought me to.
Not my precious professor.
Oh, who sent you back, Gazzy? First he shoves me in the middle class, then he chucks you out for me to support you. All part of his plan. But you double-cross him, Eliza. Don't you come home to me. Don't you take tuppence from me. You stand on your own 2 feet. You're a liar now, and you can do it.
Eliza, it's getting awfully cold in that taxi.
I say, you want to come see me turned off this morning? St. George's, Hanover Square, 10 o'clock. I wouldn't advise it, but you're welcome.
No, thank you, Dad.
Are you all finished here?
Yes, Freddy, I'm all finished here. Good luck, Dad. Come along, Alfie.
How much time do I have left?
There's just a few more hours.
That's all the time you've got.
A few more hours
before you tie the knot.
There are drinks and girls all over London, and I have to track them down in just a few more hours. I'm getting married in the morning. Ding dong, bells are gonna chime. Pull up the stopper, let's have a whopper, but get me to the church on time. I gotta be there in the morning. Spruced up and looking in me prime. Girls, come and kiss me, sure you'll miss me, but get me to the church on time. If I am dancing, roll up the floor. If I am whistling, lift me out the door. For I'm getting married in the morning. Ding dong, bells are gonna chime. Kick up a rumpus, but don't lose the compass. And get me to the church, get me to the church. For God's sakes, get me to the church on time.
I'm getting married in the morning. Ding dong, the bells are gonna chime.
Drug me or jail me, send me, kill me.
But get me to the church on time. I've got to be there in the morning. Screw stopping, looking in me prime.
Some bloke who's able, lift up the table
and get me to the church on time. If I am flying,
then shoot me down.
If I am wooing, let her out of town. Or I'm getting married in the morning. Ding dong, the bells are gonna chime.
Very lively indeed.
Ding dong, bears are chiming.
And you know the worst part is our choreography was done by Mr. Rooney. And
Mr. Rooney.
So when we said the term,
right,
when we said ding dong, the bells are going to chime, we literally used our legs to look like bells. Ding dong. We like did a little ding dong, the bells are going to, because that's all that Mr. Rooney can come up with is, you're going to dance like bells. That's...
I don't know how to dance like a bell, Mr. Rooney.
So you needed a more progressive school with some, like, you know.
I know, it's almost avant-garde, right? It's almost like Twyla Tharp in a way. It's like just experimental dance, you know.
I want you to dance like a bell. Oh, yes.
What does that mean?
Listen, when you're doing a musical and you've got this choreography that you're supposed to do, clearly everybody is going to look silly all together.
That is true.
So as long as everybody does it in unison, you're all jumping down the cliff like lemmings at the same time. Before we wrap this up, we have to know what ended up happening to Mr. Rooney.
You know, God bless him. I have no idea where he is. I hope he's still alive. I hope he's still with us because he was just such a great person in my life. I think he's probably still living in North Andover. Back in my tiny little town.
And the art teacher as well?
I would hope so. Yeah, I would hope so that they both are living. But I don't think that they, you know, they're probably retired, very retired. They were pretty old when they were working with us.
What about the ladies?
What about the
what
ladies?
What about the ladies?
I think Kathleen has
there.
A kid. And I see her on Instagram sometimes. She's living just a very normal life. And I'm glad that my life went my way and she went hers because we were not right for each other at all. Kendra, I couldn't give fuck all about because I think that she was above my league anyway. So, you know, I... It's not gonna ever gonna happen.
Tall chicks, man.
Yeah, something about them. I actually am okay with tall chicks. I'll be honest with you. I like that idea.
Do you talk about women at all in your sets?
Do I talk about women at all in my sets?
He does a lot of feminist propaganda jokes.
I do it less these days because there aren't so many women in my life. I really don't have a lot of heat right now in the romance department, so I've moved on to other things, but that's fine. You never know what's going to happen.
Where can somebody see your set, and what kind of stuff could somebody expect from your set?
Yeah, I got some good stuff coming up. October 5th, I'm doing this cool show that's called Dunces and Dragons. It's a Dungeons and Dragons-themed comedy show. I don't know anything about it. I'm not running it, but...
I want to go already.
Wouldn't it be cool?
It's going to be an adventure.
I think it will absolutely be. There's a dungeon master. It's going to be, like, totally insane. And then I think I've got... So where usually people can see me? I mean, if you want to come to Jeet Jet on Sunday night, I'm usually there doing a little bit of experimental stuff.
Jimmy does host this open mic at Jeet Jet every Sunday at 9 p.m.
Yes, that's the double promotion right there. Yes, Sam is a regular at the Jeet Jet.
That's great.
J'EAT? Jeet Jet.
Great fries there. They got poutine. I love that place.
Yes, which is on 20th Street and 5th Avenue in Old Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I wish they called it Old Brooklyn. Let's just add to old.
Old Brooklyn.
Old Brooklyn.
I'm from Old Brooklyn.
So you got the Dungeons and Dragons. You've got the Jeet Jet appearances. And then anything else? You got a website, a Twitter you want to plug?
Follow me at Sam Zeezy. That's SamZeezy. I'm also on Instagram. I'm on Snapchat under those both. I do a thing on Snapchat where I pretend to be... I'm the king of Snapchat, you know. I do bada bing, bada boom. Like I'm a member of the rap pack, but I'm like on Snapchat.
Right on.
That's a fun thing I've been working on. You can see me on Snapchat if you follow me there. And you know what? If you have any other questions, just find me in real life and ask me. I'm very approachable.
Very funny guy, Sam Z. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much, dude.
Thank you out there for listening.
My pleasure.
Again, guys, you're listening right here to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Lawson Rewound signing out. My name is Jimmy Hoffman.
I'm Alon Danziger.
Thank you guys so much.
See you next week.
Accents for the rest of the session.
Oh, I don't know, man. I'll butcher something quicker than an actual butcher.
Be that talking necklace.
I'll just do the Pee Wee Herman / Sammy Davis Jr. voice. That's the only real voice.
No, I never thought how close Pee Wee Herman was to Sammy Davis Jr. That's
today we.
That's amazing.
Secret word is true.
Take your rainbow.
I'm seeing people saying, name three fictional characters that describe you. So my fictional characters, the first thing I could think of were Scully the Skeleton and Jockosaurus the Dinosaur. And then...
Don Zorni, the necklace of the Star of David that talks like a mix of Louis Armstrong fucking Sam Tina Jr.